Okay.
We would like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn Le'inoli Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and Chaim's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, the Neshama should have an Aliyah.
Amen.
We are going to do a Mishnah this morning that is a little bit different than other Mishnayos that we've done in the past. We're still going in order, so this is the next one that comes up after what we just did. But it's a little bit different, and I want us to think about how it's different, and perhaps why it's different, and what lessons we can learn from the fact that it is different. And that is Perek Bey's Mishnah 6. You have it here on the top of your smaller paged source sheet. This is continuing statements of Hillel. Hillel was talking before this, Hillel is talking during this, and Hillel is talking after this as well. He has the next Mishnah as well, and we're going to actually read the next Mishnah too, just in case it's relevant to this Mishnah. So let's jump in. Afu ra'ah, gulgelas achad shetzafa al pinei hamayins. So even Hillel saw, a skull that was floating on the face of the water. Amar la, I guess we should rate, give ratings of, PG-13, PGs. This is a pretty violent Mishnah. He saw a skull floating on the water. Amar la, he says to the skull, al de ataft atfuch v'sof mitiapecha yitufun. From the fact that you drowned others, that is the reason why you were drowned. And at the end, those that drowned you will be drowned. So that's pretty gruesome, pretty intense, right? So first thoughts on this Mishnah. What's different? Is there something that bothers you about this? Is there something that you like about this? It sounds violent. Okay, well, remember, let's just be clear. Hillel's not the one who did the killing here. He's just reflecting on the violence that he's observing in the world. Yeah? Okay, maybe the guy was killed by accident.
But it says in the Torah, if you kill somebody by accident, you will get punished, even though it was by accident. But it's a whole chain of that.
Okay, so good. What we're getting to start off with is, how do we deal with the concept of judgment, of things that, punishment for things that you have done or somebody else has done? How are they punished? And as well as, if you see some tragedy, is that automatically assumed then that that person deserves this? Right? Hillel's jumping to that conclusion. The fact that you're a dead skull means that you deserve to be a dead skull. Yeah.
Now what happens to the rest of the body?
Where's the rest of the body? That's a good question. Maybe that's a clue as to what's going on. Let's keep that in mind. Why is he a detached, decapitated head? Where's the rest of the body? Okay, so that's some good questions. What other questions? In terms of the...
More graphic than it was before.
It is definitely more graphic. Again, we should have flashed the warning. This is at least PG-13, although now it's probably a Disney movie like this. So what? Let's talk about the text for a second. Forget about the philosophical issues. In terms of the text, does anybody notice what language this text is written in? This is in Aramaic, right? So it starts off in Hebrew, and then when it gets to what Hillel is saying, he says it in Aramaic. He talks to the skull in Aramaic. So that's just interesting. Keep that in mind. It's a switch in language here. What else perhaps bothers you about this text? Now think more broadly. Yeah. Raise your hand too early there.
Most of Perek Yavos we've learned so far is advice telling you kind of, how to act, how to be, the way to the there to walk in the world. And this is not that.
Excellent. That's exactly where I was going. There's no advice here. There's nothing to do. What do you want me to do with this, Hillel? What's my takeaway that now I am going to become maybe a better person? What am I supposed to learn from this? This seems to be different than, be a good person, learn a lot of Torah. This skull deserved to be killed. So what's the message? Okay, let's keep that in mind as we go. One more, yeah?
Afu, where are the rest of the people? I mean, obviously, other people saw it also. And Afu,
Right, so where's the judge?
Who saw it before?
Who saw what? Who saw the skull?
Yeah.
Maybe other people saw it. Maybe he was the first one to see it. I'm not sure. But there are other people involved in this, and what their place is part of that question is, who deserved this? Why do they deserve it? How do we know? How is he so certain that they deserved it? These are all good questions to ask. Now, we're going to read the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah could be understood completely differently and as a totally separate topic. We're going to see later on that there's at least one commentator who connects the two Mishnayos together. And because of that, I want to just read through it now. We're probably going to go in more detail into it the next time we have a session. So it's good preparation for that as well. We'll just read through it quickly and keep in mind this might be related, and think about as we read it how possibly, although it's a little bit of a stretch in terms of just figuring it out from reading it, but how possibly it's related to the previous Mishnah. So Hu Haya Omer, continuing in the next box.
Let me finish chewing first.
Hu Haya Omer. He used to say, so same Hillel said the following statements, Marbe Basar Marbe Rima. Okay, so are you saying that on purpose?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So the more, now you can interpret this in two ways. We'll get to it more in detail, but let's just assume the larger somebody is, the more worms they will have. Now, what exactly does that mean? Let's just go with a simple explanation, which might not be the correct one. The more that when you go into the grave, there'll be worms to eat you. Okay, all right, let's leave that for now. But marbe basar, marbe rima, marbe nechasim, marbe daga. So the more possessions we have, the more money we have, the more things we have to worry about, the more anxiety we have about those things. If we had a simple life, we wouldn't have to worry about all those things that we had. So marbe nechasim, marbe daga. Next one's also interesting. Marbe nashim marbek shafin. Okay, so the more women a person has, presumably multiple wives it's talking about, the more witchcraft will be involved with that. Let's hold off on that. Who's that? I don't know. Okay, we'll save that for next week. Marbe shafakos marbe zima. The more maidservants you have, the more licentiousness will be around your house. Marba avadim, marba gezel, the more servants you have, the more stealing that will be involved in your house. That's the bad list. Now the good list. Marba Torah, marba chayim, the more Torah you have, the more life you have. Marba yeshiva, marba chachma, the more you sit, the more you learn, the more wisdom you'll have. Marba etzem, marba tfunas, the more you ask advice, the more wisdom you're going to have. Marba tzedakah, marba shalom, the more tzedakah you give, the more peace there is in the world. Kona Shem Tov, Kona La'atzmo, if you acquire a good name, you've acquired that for yourself. Kona Lo Divrei Torah, if you have acquired yourself Divrei Torah, you will acquire yourself Kona Lo Chaye Ha'olam Haba, you'll get the world to come. So we have a list basically of half the Mishnah is causative things on the negative side. You do these things, it'll lead to bad things. And then there's causative things on the good side. You do these good things, it'll lead to good things. So keep that in your back pocket for the sources. Now, how are we going to deal with this? One of the things that we're going to look at as we read the commentators is I want us to be thinking about how the commentators are dealing with this. What sort of questions do the commentators ask or not ask about this Mishnah? Are they bothered by the same things that we're bothered by, or are they not? And that itself tells us about the worldview of the, could tell us in theory about the worldview of the commentators themselves. Look at source number one. This is Rashi. Perish Rashi. Afu. Hillel Haya Omer. Even he, Hillel used to say, Al da ataft akut. From the fact that you drown somebody else, you are being drowned. So Rashi explains, Al shahayita melastemet tabriot, umatzipin benahar. So since you were this bandit, this robber, and you killed people and threw them in the ocean, in the water, so too that happened to you. Okay, so far nothing crazy. This is what we've already expected. V'sof mitiapecha yitifun, ota shehitzipucha, so the ones who killed you, you gamken mesim ba'osa misa, shehem ayu chayavin misa, el shenergu ayidezeh, mibnei shayah kodesh baruch hu asid, legavos miyada. So these people who killed you will also get the same destiny that has befell you. And even though, right, so they are chayav misa because they killed you, so they're worthy of death too. since this is how they killed you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to gather that from them and kill them and make or have them killed and have them float on water. V'chen hu omer, and this is important. V'chen hu omer means, I'm going to quote to you a pasuk. And what this is doing for us is it's giving us precedent. Right? Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos aren't necessarily made in a vacuum. Right? The rabbinic worldview, they didn't just make it up like that. Generally, there was biblical precedent. So we like to quote psukim. And this is the role of the commentator sometimes, because in the Mishnah itself, sometimes it does quote a pasuk, sometimes it doesn't. Here it doesn't. So Rashi's telling us, don't think Hillel's just making this up. There's biblical precedent for this. What would be the biblical precedent for this? So he quotes one pasuk. It's in Shmuel. Mirashayim yatzei rasha. Yatzei rasha. So from wicked, wicked comes. V'yesh mekomot shelo nagu lomar zos ha'alacha. So he quotes a precedent, and then he says there are some places that don't include this in the Mishnayos.
There's a lot of Rashayim.
There are a lot of Rashayim?
There,
so they don't read this one. They ring this out, right? So that's probably not the pshat. But it is interesting that Rashi said, we don't have this in our, as far as I know, he doesn't say other Mishnahs, okay, some people have this Mishnah, some people have this Mishnah, we leave this one out, we choose this one. Why this one all of a sudden doesn't make the list, according to Rashi? Some people delete this one from Mishnayos. Okay, so good. So that's the philosoph. So I would say that that's not the reason why he leaves it out, because Rashi's not arguing with the concept here. Right? Rashi agrees and believes that what Hillel is saying is correct. It's actually a Gemara that quotes the same exact thing in the name of Hillel, the same statement. I think Rashi's problem, possibly, with why it's in the Mishnayos, gets back to what Yossi said. This isn't a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. This isn't a feel-good, let me improve myself message. You're talking, I mean, what are you going to say? You're going to say it's a message to, you know, the mob to realize that you're going to get what's coming to you. Well, guess what? The mob's not reading Pirkei Avos. So, why is it here? It doesn't make any sense to be here. So I think that might be where Rashi's coming from. Not that he disagrees with the concept, but that its place in Pirkei Avos, some say, some call into question it and leave it out.
He doesn't eliminate association with promotion.
Right, so I don't know what that means. I'm not sure if he means that then that gets back to Jake. Right, so they skip this one. That's a little bit weird. The way I'm reading it is that that it's not part of their text. So maybe Jake's right. Okay, so that's Rashi. Now, yeah?
I'm still having trouble understanding how Hillel was so certain that his drownings
were. We're going to get there. So how are we, that philosophical question, or sort of why is he so sure that this is happening, the Mepharshim are going to deal with this. But notice Rashi does not ask that question. That did not bother Rashi at all in this case.
I made a mistake.
You made a mistake? Okay.
It's not Shkodah. It's somebody who kills on purpose and there's no witness.
Right. Then they go under the ladder and the ladder falls on them. Right.
That is an expression. Who lives by the sword dies by the sword.
Okay.
There's a takeoff on this.
All right, maybe. Okay, so let's see who says this. Look at source number 2, the Rambam. Again, so similar questions that we are asking on the commentators, what bothers them, what doesn't bother them. Let's read that in the Rambam, source number 2. Okay, source 2. Everybody ready? Omar. So that which you kill, that he says to that skull, that which you kill, that happens to you, and that who killed you is going to happen to you too. To them, Ritzono Lomar, Sha'ata neheragta mipnei sheharagta zulatecha. You were killed because you killed somebody else. Vasher haragcha yeherag, and that who killed you will be killed. Va'kavana bezeh, and the purpose, the statement, the meaning is. Hamamar shamati shimaase haraot yashuvu berosh osehem. Bad deeds, bad actions will come back to you. They will catch up to you. They will get to you. Kemosha Amar, and now he quotes another pasuk. So like Rashi, he wants to quote to us a precedent here. Avonosa v'yilchadunu. Your sins will catch you. You will be trapped and ensnared by your own sins. Right? You've... What is it? You've prepared your trap, whatever, there's probably some other statement like Lazer was talking about. Va'amar tehillim bor kara b'chulu umamar chachamim. So we have biblical precedent. And now we even have more concepts in rabbinic precedent. Umamar chachamim b'mida sh'adam moded b'modedin lo. With the trait, with the measure that somebody has been measured, that is how we measure them. So meaning that you get, it's like mida keneged mida. What happens to you, what you do to others, is going to come back to you. Right? There's a retribution here of justice that's assumed that the world will catch up to you. Your actions will catch up to you. So now the question is, if you stop there, let's assume that we just take this for granted. There's biblical precedent, there's rabbinic precedent, that your actions are going to catch up to you. What question can we ask about that? A, it doesn't happen to everybody. Good, we'll see that's going to be a question. Let's ask a different question, though. Let's assume it does happen to everybody. It doesn't, and that's a question. But let's assume that it does. We're not going to question that right now. How does it happen to everybody?
So, he mentioned Mida Keneged Mida. This is God's system of justice and reward. And actually, it could possibly apply to the second part of the Mishnah as well. It's a kind of exchange good.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat what you said just in case somebody didn't hear it, and then I'm going to try to poke holes in your theory for a second. And that is, you started by saying this is part of God's system of justice, right? Those languages. And I could agree with that. But then you sort of dug your own hole, if you will. Mida keneged mida. You then quoted the next Mishnah. So if you just read the next Mishnah without this Mishnah, and it says Marba Nechasim Marba Daiga, is that God's system of justice? Or how would you qualify that?
Why not?
Well, maybe why not, but before you say why not, why yes? What other possible explanations could be for that? I mean, if you're just reading that, you pick up a psychology journal and you read Marba Rima, Marba Nechasa, Marba Daiga. Right? So what are they going to say in the footnote? This is God's system of retributive justice?
No, it's our way of thinking.
I know, but what's the other possible way of understanding it?
It's a natural
consequence. Good. So the second Mishnah, you can easily read as natural consequences, right? And now the question is, what about, not that you can't read it as divine justice too, and that's our way of thinking, but you can easily read the second Mishnah as just natural consequences. You eat a lot, you're going to put on weight, that weight has to go somewhere, and the worms enjoy that, right? So you have lots of nechasim, you got to worry, it's going to happen, you're going to have to worry about it, you're going to have to figure out, what are you going to do with all that stuff? So my question though is, so now let's work backwards to our Mishnah. Is our Mishnah, should it be read as just, this is God's way of doing things, and it doesn't work in the natural order of things, but God just takes care of that? Or do we read this as, this is just natural consequences? If you're a mobster, you're eventually going to get killed. Just wait till the end of the movie. It's going to happen to you. They're going to catch you, right? And you think you've made it off, and you're in your offshore accounts, and you're sitting in the Caymans and everything. Somebody's going to catch you one day, and the bullet's going to get you, right? So is this just a natural consequence, or is it divine justice? And so I don't have an answer for you, but I want us to think about that as we continue reading the Rambam quickly, and then we're going
to
finish the Rambam. Right, so that gets to the bigger philosophical question. What about somebody innocent who's, maybe this guy didn't do anything and it just happened to be that he was killed and murdered and life stinks and that's it. You know, if you saw the movie, so a long time ago, what's it called? One second, I'm going to get it.
What's the best?
It's about this topic. I don't want to ruin the ending for you. I don't even know why. Who's in it is now a very controversial figure. Pay it forward, okay? It's about this topic, where people do good things, and in the end, you just get killed, or the kid gets killed, or whatever it is. So that's this problem is your is what you're dealing with, but we're going to deal with that.
So what is justice?
Okay. Good. Good. Okay. So that you're asking the right questions. Let's hold off on them. We're going to get to them. So let's finish the Rambam. For this Rambam, think about, is this just natural order or is this divine justice? So we're in the middle of the third line of the Rambam. V'zeh nira la'ayin b'kol zman uv'chol makom. This is obvious everywhere and at all points in time. You just have to see this. There's no tricks here. There's no backhanded divine justice that we don't understand and we don't see. This is glaringly obvious at all points in time. Anybody who does bad things, sins, who atzmo yasigehu nezek mi osan haros gufo asher chidesh. Those same things that he did, that he set up, are going to catch up with him, and they're going to grab him, and they're going to get him. Lefishu yilamed pu'ula shetiase lo uluzulaso, because that's just the natural order, it sounds like he's saying, of the actions that he does, and others are going to see it, and they're going to learn from him, and they're going to do the same things to him. V'chein kol melamed ma'ala. Then, okay, so some hope for us. Think about, now why is he saying this? He's probably saying this, I would assume, because most of us reading Pirkei Avos are not murderers, hopefully, right? So now we're going to flip it a little bit, and he says, V'chein kol melamed ma'ala. Anytime you do something good and you learn to do something nice, umishi yatzla b'pol tov min atovus, and you start doing something that's beneficial, tagia lo to'eles zeh hapoel. That thing that you're doing that's nice is going to eventually help you. It's going to be nice back to you. Lefisha hu yalame davar shiasa lo uluzulaso, because now you're teaching, you're learning something new, other people are going to learn from you. The lashon hakasuv bezechacha ma'od, and the language of the pasuk, again, he's quoting us some biblical precedent here from Iyov, ki poel adam yishalom lo. The actions that you do will come back to you. They'll pay you back, both in the good and in the bad. The Rambam seems to be describing here, this is just a natural order of how the world works. You do something good, that good will help you. You do something bad, that bad is going to hurt you in the end. Now, everybody can like jump out of their seats and say, but it's still not true. Didn't you see Pay It Forward, Rambam, right? Kids die because of nothing they didn't do anything wrong. People, so what's going on here? It doesn't answer all the questions. It seems very, very simplified in its approach to what happens in the world. Right, so we didn't get the world to come yet. and Yanki, well, that's obvious. Okay, yeah, but Yanki said something else. It's ironic that he's quoting Eov, because the whole point of Eov is that we don't understand and that it's not fair. So what are you quoting to me Eov for?
There's divine natural order in the world. If you do something and you don't change or have repentance, that's going to be your end. It's sort of like what happened with the O.J. Simpson verdict. The point being is that how do you reconcile that ultimately there's going to be divine justice. One day there's going to be accountable for
that. Right, so good. So if you look at a good portion of what happens in the world, we can see things that, people who do bad things do get punished. And they do get caught. And that happens a lot, right? So I don't think anybody has a problem with that. I think the Rambam will say that and say, like, that's my point. I think where the tension is coming from is, what about the other 5% on both sides? On both when the bad person doesn't get caught, and also when good people get hurt and they don't necessarily deserve it. Right, so this is a huge question of theodicy. Right, so whatever the percentages are, it's a big percent. So this is a huge topic right now, and we still have to figure out why is this in Pirkei Avos, but this is a huge theological topic. Why do good things happen to bad people, and why do bad things happen to good people seems to be at the core of what this Mishnah is talking about. If you think you're going to get out of here with an answer to that question, you're mistaken. But what you will get out of it, hopefully, is some exploration of how the commentators deal with it. So let's look at source number 3. We're just going to read the last line. Rabbeinu Yonah says similar things to Rashi, maybe a little bit towards the Rambam. But just the last line in source number 3, he quotes another concept that we have in Chazal. I italicized it for you. Shekulan chayavin umegalan chova al yedei chayav. when bad things happen, so God, this is getting to what you were saying before, that bad things are done, God makes it in the world, not necessarily as a natural consequence. This sounds to be more of divine justice. God will make it that bad things will happen to bad people and through bad people. So the bad system will be held with into the bad people. That's one line to pull up from Rabbeinu Yonah. But let's see here Rashi, the fourth. So we already did Rashi in source number one. Rashi in source number four is the... Remember I mentioned to you that this same statement is in the Gemara. It's in the Talmud and Sukkah, Daf Nun Gimel. And Rashi there deals with it and says something that he doesn't say over here. And what Rashi says here sort of tries, at least if you read it in a certain way, to sidestep the whole problem. Right, so the whole problem that you know a bunch of people brought up is, how does he know what happened to this guy? How does he know? Maybe the guy was killed by accident. So how does Rashi get out of this? Source number four. Shitzaf al pnei amayim. Shechatchu es rosho v'tilu l'mayim. They cut off his head, put it into the river, to the water. V'hikir bo shehu rotzeach. He saw the guy, and the guy was on the most wanted list. He was in all the newspapers. He saw his face, and he's like, oh, that's the mob guy. So that sidesteps that problem. So how does he know he killed? Maybe he was just an innocent person. No, this guy was wanted for murder. And he sees his face, and you ask before, why is it his face? He sees his face, he recognizes it, identifies it, and he says, okay, now it makes sense. And now he got caught up, the mob caught up with him. So what Rashi just did here is he limited the whole problem tremendously. Right? What is he saying? Is that he's a bad guy and bad things happen to bad people. Does that mean that it always is true that way? That always bad people get caught? No. Maybe sometimes it happens, sometimes. In this case it happened. And the Rambam would be very happy to say, yeah, look, that happens all the time. Doesn't happen every single time, but it happens very often. So Rashi, apparently, with this statement, sidesteps the whole problem, and then Hillel can be understood without making these broad, general, sweeping statements that this is always the case. No, I know this guy. He's a mobster. Now, look at Tosfos. Tosfos sidesteps the question also using a different technique. And this, I think Arlene might have said it before, I don't remember. So source number five, Tosfos. Avakasha de Chazinon Kama Avar Yonim Vode Avodas Kochavim Shemesim Al Mitosam. We see so many evil, bad people, idol worshippers and murderers, and they die quietly on their deathbed. So what's the story here? So Vyesh Lomar, now this is fascinating. Da'al Yede Tshuva HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekel. Now we just threw in a whole new variable here. What about tshuva? What about tshuva? Tshuva can save us here by saying that, okay, so not everybody who does something bad dies, but they did tshuva. They did tshuva. Ulufamim mocha legamre. Oschus tololo. They don't know from imenu b'chaya. So one thing is that it's tshuva, and he's completely forgiven. Or sometimes he says... What is that last? It's the second move he just made here, strategic move. Eino nifram imenu b'chayev. What's he saying? He'll get in the next world. Right? So we just introduced two other theological ideas that make the whole concept of tzaddik v'ralo and rasha v'tovlo so much more complicated, because how does it work? You're just saying it's so simple, this divine retributive justice, and that's how it works. Okay, what about tshuva? That's another variable in the equation. And what about the fact that they might get punished in the next world? That's another variable in the equation. And if you put all of these things into the equation, what do you end up with? What do you end up with? Nothing. And that's the exact point. If once you put all of these things in, Hillel's statement becomes redundant, right? Or even worse than redundant. It doesn't make any sense. You don't know. How do you know Hillel? How do you know? Maybe the guy did tshuva. Or maybe this is the opposite question. This is the question of the people who aren't killed. But the point here is that we don't know how God's system of justice works. We're trying to figure it out. And here's a clue here and there. And maybe I can make a definitive statement every once in a while. But for the most part, I can't. Because I don't know how all of the other these things factor in, which will at the end of the day lead us to, I think, what's going to be our conclusion. We'll see another few sources, but what's going to be our conclusion is we just have no idea.
No, but I don't know how to
Yeah.
Because all those things are true.
Yeah.
All these mean different. But because the Torah itself says there is a system of reward and punishment, we believe it has to do. Because that is a statement from the Torah.
Right, so good.
If it wasn't from the Torah, we would say, we can always find another way to explain it. But
so good. So you're going in the direction we're going to go in, and that is that. Maybe I'll take a step back if what I said wasn't completely accurate, but I think it's what I meant, was that not that divine justice doesn't exist, is that we just don't understand it, right? And maybe that clarifies it. So for sure divine justice exists, we just don't know how it works. Hillel's statement seems to be simplified, the equation is exact, and then you could insert Rashi. Okay, he knew this guy was a mobster and that's how he was so confident, or maybe he was just confident because he thought the system was clear even without all these other variables. But it's a little simplified. Yeah.
So it begs the question of why are we bothering? We're not going to know God's divine justice. What do we have? We can look at the Torah, do what the Torah says, try to do the best we can, but why are we trying to figure it out?
Okay, good question. Save it. So it's a good question on two levels. It's a good question on just a general level, and it's an even better question on the Perkei Avos level. Right? Why is it here? So, okay, good. We'll get there. I do want to hold off questions for a second. So we're going to see. So write your questions down. We have two big sources we still have to do, so I want to make sure that we get them. So flip the page. We have source number six. Source number six. Tosfos Yom Tov. I gave, it's the first time I think we're really fully quoting him in depth. So I gave you a little bit of a biographical excerpt from Wikipedia. So, Gershon Shaul Yom Tov Lipman ben Natan Alevi Heller, from the 16th century. He was a Bohemian rabbi and Talmudist, wrote a commentary on the Mishnah called Tosfos Yom Tov, and that's what we're going to read from now. He was a Talmud scholar in Prague. He was a student of the Maharal of Prague, and he has, again, a running commentator on all Mishnayos. These numbers here that I put is just to make it easier for us to access the different levels, otherwise it's just one big chunk of information. But those numbers aren't inherent to the text, they're just my additions. So let's try to read this. He goes into big depth here. So part is starting by number one. Al da'atapt atfuch v'sof matifecha yitifun v'im tomar al korcha harishon shenerag kisha'ata choshev l'mafreya timsa shehu lo harag. So he asks a different question. What about the first guy who was killed? Did he kill in order to be killed? No, because he's the first guy who killed. So if you go back all the way, if you're so simplified, Hillel, to say anybody who's killed killed before that, so what about the first guy who killed? He didn't kill to deserve it. So what did he, first guy who was killed, who was? Who was killed? Hevel. So what did Hevel do to deserve this? You're saying he must have killed somebody. He didn't kill anybody. He was the first guy who was killed. So that's his question. Havare Hevel hargan kain v'hu lo harag v'im kein minale shamar al detap tatfuch. And then even, kain wasn't killed right away for that. Okay, so let's see. That's question number one. Question number two. The kol shekein dekasha masha amar v'sof matiafecha yitufun. And how do you know that the people who killed you are going to be killed? Didil below, maybe not. Umaisim b'chol yom. Contrast that to the Rambam, who said it's so clear that people get their due. Umaisim b'chol yom. Kama ratzchanim shemesim al mitasim b'dei shamayim. There are so many killers who die at the hands of heaven in their deathbed. Three. V'ra'isi ani kushya zeh shehuksha b'medrash rabba. So he says, this question I'm not making up. This question actually has precedent in Chazal, in the Medrash Rabba, Parshas Va'aschana, okay? This last week's Parsha. Al pasach shofich dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafich. So this is similar to our, it's basically the same justice thing, is that the person who kills, he's going to end up being killed. Amar Rabbi Levi, Barei Kama Bnei Adam Shehargu Meisu Amitoseim. Same questions in the Chazal already, in the Medrash. They didn't, these people killed and they didn't die. Heshivu also, so what's the answer? Mahu Ba'adam Damo Yishafeich Kishiyavo Kol Bnei Adam La'asid Lavo Osa Shah Damo Yishafeich. So he gets out of the question by saying, what are we talking about? The world to come. it's almost, I don't mean this in a negative way, but it's an easy way out. The point is that we don't really know. The Pusik says it, we believe that it's true, but there's an expanded playing field in terms of how this plays out, and it's not just your eyes in front of you today. It includes Olam Haba, and they're going to get their due in the world to come. Now, 4. V'kusha rishona nami shal haresha, hinei ra'isya maimar azeh al da'atap, Disa Berbrisis, who says even the first question is asked in Perek HaCholil, Daf Nun Gimel, that's what we saw, and Rashi says, Hutalamayim v'yikir bo shurotzeach, so Rashi gets out of the problem, we already saw that by saying that he recognized the guy as being a killer. Ubeperes Rashi, Dal Masechta Didan, Kasuv Yesh Mekoma Shalo Nagu Lomar Zu Alacha, Rashi, then the first Rashi we saw, says that there are those who don't recite this as a Mishnah, as a Halacha, Aval Rambam, Gam HaRav, V'chol Mefarshim, Etika, but he says he can't really just sidestep it by saying, oh, it doesn't belong here because everybody else puts it here. Okay. Now, 5. This is fascinating. Baal Medrash Shmuel Amar gives a different answer. Medrash Shmuel gives a different answer. B'teretz HaKushya, D'Seifa, D'Lekach Amar V'Sof Mitziafecha, Kolomar, D'Lesof Al Yedei Gilgul HaMikuyam B'Divrei Razal, V'Hiskim L'Daitam Pitagora, some guy, V'Shar Chochmei Umos Kasher Yizkirim HaBarabinova Parshas Tetze, Sofos Yushtuf. So what's our other way out of this? Gilgulim. Right? Now, this is a huge topic as to whether or not, you know, Gilgul, reincarnation, is a Jewish concept or not. Ramban says yes. Rambam's not such a big fan. The other way out of this is, okay, so you got it. You weren't killed in this world. You weren't punished in this world. And you don't even have to go to Olam Haba, because guess what? You're coming back to this world in some other reincarnation. You thought you were done. You're not done yet. You're coming back, and you're going to get punished in that Gilgul. What does this do? Again, it just sidesteps the problem of what we see with our own eyes, because we don't see everything with our own eyes. There's a bigger picture here, whether you want to say it's Olam Haba or Gilgul, etc. So that's the Medrash Shmuel's answer. Now, one second. The Tosos Yontos is going to have a problem with that. Tosos Yontos' problem with that is not that he necessarily disagrees with the concept of Gilgul and reincarnation. It's that Hillel wouldn't have put that in the Mishnah. Why? And this gets into something that is interesting historically. It used to be that these concepts were secret, right? So the masses didn't know about all these Kabbalistic, mystical concepts that when we hear them, we might think like, oh, I don't understand that, I don't get that. And the reason why is because they kept it as a secret and they didn't want everybody to know. So what the Tosfos Yontif is saying, just from a perspective of how can the Medrash Shmuel say that Hillel, the whole message of Hillel in the Mishnah is to teach us about Gilgul. Hillel would have hid that. You don't find that explicitly mentioned. So even if you believe in that, and even if you want to say that it's in there, Hillel wouldn't have put it in there explicitly, because that's not something that he does. Hold your questions to the end. One second. So again, that's just whether or not the Mishnayos deal with that. Keep in mind, we haven't dealt with any sort of mystical, Kabbalistic concepts in Mishnayos and Perkei Avos, because that's not really what it's all about. Now, look in... eight. Go to 8. Skip some of 6 and 7. Go to 8. Here's where he gives his answer. Lachach nira li lomar. Dehachi kamar. So here, you know, you have some other answers. I don't really agree with them. Here's how I understand it, he says. V'chol dekavase lishlol hapechisus. The whole point is to put down... Oh, sorry, I skipped. Lachin, start with 8 again. Lachin nirali lomar, dahli kamar, de kemosha amar ein bor. Just like the previous Mishnah, which said ein bor yerechet and ein am aretz chasen, so you can't be simple-minded and be a pious person, right? So that was the previous Mishnah. So what was the point of the previous Mishnah? Was to put down negative traits, negative qualities. The point is to put down pachisos, meaning pachos, things that are bad, things that are negative. Kain afu ra. That's the same point in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah's point is to put down things that are bad. V'amar le al da ataft v'nimshach lo d'mishamu lahalan hu haya omer mar b'maser mar b'rima. So here's the point that I alluded to before. What the Tosfos Yontif is doing right now is he's connecting the three Mishnahs together. Our previous Mishnah, our Mishnah, and the next Mishnah of Marba Basar, Marba Rima. How do these connect together? L'chayev bahem im pechisus im ma'alos. V'zelafi shekisherah hagulgolas hazos amar le al da'atat kilomar mistama hadas nosen v'haseichel mechayev da'al da'atat atfuch ulesof matif en yitufun. So he says, it looks like, it makes sense, it should be that the fact that you were killed means that you deserved it. There's a background assumption here from Psukim that God's world is just, and if I see somebody who was killed, my go-to gut reaction should be, he deserved it. But, we're not done yet, and I like his nuance here, ki b'mida sha'adam moded ba modedin lo, because that's our operative principle, you get what you deserve. Shekachaya mida v'chein ha'secha m'chayiv, because that's what our understanding of how the Torah works, and our seichel, not just how the Torah works, how the world should work, logic should work. Ella, she'im kozeh ha'metzias machachisho. Even though I think this is how the world works, and my seichel is machayev, and my belief in God is machayev, obligates me to think this way, still when I look at metzias, when I look at the world, it doesn't work that way. Reality does not fit that. Sha'are harbe neheragim v'lo hargu, v'harbe horgim v'lo neheragim. Many have killed and weren't killed, and many were killed that didn't deserve to be killed or weren't killers. Ukidei lahaskim ha'metzios shelo yemachesh l'mashem mechayvo ha'seichel. And in order to, now I'm stuck. Right? He's saying, I'm stuck. I should believe this, but it's not in reality what I'm seeing with my own eyes. So in order to put that together, to analyze and figure out how do I grapple with these two contradictory concepts, kedei lahaskim ha'metzios shelo yemachesh l'mashem mechayvo ha'seichel. I'm stuck. I can't figure this out. So therefore, what do we do? Lefichach, next section. Aleph, A. Sorry, 8A. Lefichach, hu haya omer, v'hava margala bepume, min az v'hala, mar bebasar mar berima. So what he's saying is that the next Mishnah is an answer to this problem. Our Mishnah isn't a statement of fact. It's not a statement of take away Musar, improve yourself. It's a philosophical quandary. Our Mishnah is a setup for the next Mishnah by saying, I don't understand how this works. And then the next Mishnah comes and answers the question. How does the next Mishnah come and answer the question? So, Mar Bebasar Mar Berima, Lahargil Bepia Brios, Ki Mischayev Hakol Bechiyuv Amiti, Uvamidas Yosher. He wanted for people to get used to the fact that this is still true. That there is a natural consequence, if you will, to all of our actions. Share atamotze mar bebasar bar merima. You see that's in your front of your eyes. Mar bebasar mar berima. That's in front of your eyes. Le'inyan apachisos mar betorah mar bechayim. And so for the negative things, it's obvious, it's self-evident. But for the positive things, mar betorah mar bechayim le'inyan amilos, that's also obvious. The more Torah you have, the better your life is. That I can see with my own eyes. And that proves that everything makes sense, that everything is yasher, everything is straight. God's world is perfect and just. And he says, so therefore I take from what's obvious and I extrapolate to then what's hidden. That everything that God does is just and right, and it all stems from that. But we just don't have it in our own minds to fully understand and to fully grapple with it. We read this in the Torah for fast days. God's thought, my thoughts are not like your thoughts. God says, my ways are not like your ways. You're never going to fully understand it. V'nimsa, B. V'nimsa im kain. Shezeh mamar al da'ataft. Lo amru b'derech chiyuv l'chayev shekachu v'shekein yiyah. The statement that about the skull is not coming to say for certain that this guy deserved it. That's not the point. Don't get stuck in all of that. Because That's not what Hillel's saying. Hillel's not trying to say this guy deserved it. El b'derach hanach haya omer shekach. It was a setup. He was setting up the next Mishnah. Hanach kafi asechel v'sham afursam machisho. Because that's what I think Hillel says. That's what it should be. But yet I don't see that in reality. K'deish lo yavo adam chas v'shalom lomar deleis dan v'leis dayin. But people can't say. The conclusion can't be that there's no justice and no judge in the world. L'fichach huaya omer v'hir gubepiv l'ashmiya b'kal rav mar b'basu. That's why he emphasized over and over and over and over again that we can see natural consequences. We can see that there is a divine justice, if you will. He actually fuses your two things together, right? The natural is the divine. That's the worldly order should fit as a natural consequence. Oh, but I don't see it in terms of punishment all the time. Believe me, it exists. You just don't understand it. And that's what he says the purpose of Hillel's two things together are. If you read B further, he elaborates a little bit more, but I think we have the essence of what he is explaining. I'll take one more question, then we're going to see the last source. Yeah.
I have another question.
Comment.
It says the Kedavon of Bani. So maybe that's the way you can explain when innocent people get killed.
Their parents
fault. Ancestors.
Right. So you're kicking the question a little bit down the line, but you're still not fully answering the question. What you're giving by saying that maybe there's been some sort of ancestral problem that's causing your own pain is you're asking one question. You're answering one question, but creating a whole new, bigger question, or a side question, is that you're adding another variable to the equation that we don't fully get it. Maybe there's more generations involved here. But what you're also doing is asking, and that's not fair either. Why should I be punished for what my parents did, or my grandparents did? And that's a whole other question. We're not going to deal with that now. But it's you have a pasuk the opposite way too, so it's not so clear. Right. So I hear you, but I don't think that it's that simple, because we have to deal. We would have to deal on its own with whether or not it makes sense that people should be punished for things that their parents or grandparents did. That's actually something that is struggled within Eicha as well, which we're actually going to talk about Eicha now. But it's not so clear. Even though you have psukim that say, the opposite way. Yechezkel grappled with this, but it's a fair point. And then you also just on a Mishnah point, your point has to be understood because he's not talking to criminals. He's talking to a dead skull, and the criminals aren't reading Pirkei Avos. So for me to tell the criminal, like, guess what, you're going to be punished, is a little bit strange to fit that into Pirkei Avos as well. Okay, so let's. Let's section that off for a second. Go to your big page that you have here. The big page that you have here is a copy from Rav Soloveitchik's The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, Reflections on Tisha B'Av and Kinos. It was edited by Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, who we had here in Kingsway last year. So there's a lot to quote here. I just gave you two pages that I think sort of create the essence of what the problem is, but he's grappling with the struggles that we have been dealing with and how they relate to Tisha B'Av and what we're allowed to ask and what we're allowed to complain about on Tisha B'Av, and how do we balance that with the concept of divine justice. So I'm just going to excerpt, take a little bit out from this. You can read it on your own too. Let's start here from the second, where I put number two. By contrast, everybody see where I am? It's on page 86, where it says number two. By contrast, kinos are made up of questions and complaints. Eicha means how or why. How is it possible? How could you have done it? Why did you do it? I don't understand. But this raises a very serious question. What right do we have to say kinos, to ask and to complain? Normally, the rule is to the contrary. We are not allowed to ask questions. On any other day, if God forbid disaster strikes, the law is that a Jew cannot ask Eicha why. The very question of Eicha is intolerable. Who am I to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to explain anything to me? What do you mean how or why? Who are you to understand? What allows you to be so bold? What right do you have to address yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu this way? Kacha ala b'machshava lefanai. This is what I thought, says the Gemara in the name of God. This is my will and that's all. In situations of distress, we never ask questions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If someone, God forbid, loses a member of his family, he does not rend his garments with the word Eicha. On the contrary, when a Jew finds himself in a catastrophic situation, he says, Baruch Dina Emes, blessed be the true judge. He acknowledges that the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is true and just, and that is all. He says, I sinned, and immediately recites the vidui. Normally, our words do not consist of questions, but of viduim, confessions. We say al chet shechatanu for the sins we have committed, and nothing more. He says here in the next paragraph, when tragedy strikes, the Jew says siddur kadin. He acknowledges the justness of the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are just. God of truth, without iniquity, righteous and fair is he. The Lord is righteous in all his ways and gracious in all his works. We never find the question of Eicha in the ordinary course of events. So-called theologians ask this question, but the question itself is illegitimate. There is no need to explain the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's inscrutable will, in our rational categories, and as a matter of fact, it is forbidden to do so. Basically, therefore, we should have no right to say kinos. So he starts off by saying our assumption and all the things that we're thinking about as we start reading our Mishnah is that this is divine justice, it all makes sense, it's all good. Who are you to ask, oh, what about this guy who didn't get killed? Or this guy who got killed and didn't deserve it? You don't understand this, you don't get this. Don't think you know what's going on. And that's really what the essence of our Mishnah, at least the way the commentators, the way we presented it, seem to be saying. But that does lead us off with the problem. Right? So then how do we say Eicha? The whole concept of Eicha is asking questions. So how are we allowed to ask questions? There shouldn't be Eicha, there should be Tzidka Din. We should get up and say, we deserve this.
Questions on Yirmiyah, basically.
Yeah, fair. Right, and that makes the question stronger and more difficult to grapple with and more personal for us. And it's even more, now it's more emotional, possibly. And it's the same problem. It's the same problem. But, right, so flip the page now. Go to where it says seven. Go to seven. Right, so he quotes, Vayidom Aaron. Aaron was silent. He accepted the justice. But seven is, the catastrophe of the Churban Beis HaMikdash is the one exception to this rule. Indeed, we say things in the kinos that we have no right to say as a matter of course. Yes, the Masechta Sofrim says that on Tisha B'Av the blessing of Baruch Dayana Emes, blessed be the true judge, was recited. But on Tisha B'Av, we are permitted to do something forbidden to us in ordinary circumstances. The Jew is given special permission on Tisha B'Av to ask Eicha. Tisha B'Av, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, enjoys a special license. If we are indeed mourning for the destruction of Jerusalem and the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we have a right to say Eicha, to ask why. The Avelus of Tisha B'Av has a characteristic feature, the Kum Va'aseh, that we do not find in Avelus Chadash, or regular Avelus, and that is Kinos. Kinos is a specific feature of Tisha B'Av. In fact, many of the Kinos, or Lezer Kalir, that we recite, begin with the word Eicha. So on Tisha B'Av, and he elaborates, and you can read this on your own, on Tisha B'Av he says, that's the day you have the right.
Why?
You can't ask why today, you can only ask on Tisha B'Av. Why are you allowed to ask on Tisha B'Av?
Yes.
So I think the answer would be, you could read the piece in total, but I think the answer is that it's giving us a place to grapple with our own struggles. Meaning, I think that tension that the Tosfos Yom Tov brings out, I mean, the tension of, on the one hand, I have this schema, this mindset, the background of everything that I go through in life should be, everything God does is just. But then we look at the world and it doesn't seem to be just. And that's a struggle. That's a tension. And the way we resolve that tension is to say, we don't understand, but it is just, and we accept that just. On one day, you have the right to complain. Right? On one day, that part of you that doesn't understand could say, God, I really don't understand this. I really don't know why this is happening, why this happened to us, why this tragedy has happened to us. That can't be our operative principle for the rest of the year. It can't be our operative principle in general as our mindset, but that it's almost giving us that license on one day to let that part of us have its expression of frustration and not understanding, because at the end of the day, it's a struggle and we don't fully understand it. Yeah. What did they do before the Churban? When were they allowed to complain?
No, but they didn't have a problem. They didn't have a problem. They had, before the first Churban, people died, but you didn't have that major national catastrophe. And that's what Tisha B'Av was.
Yeah.
Right. So you might, you could question if I'm presenting this, and maybe we could read Rav Soloveitchik more in depth and try to figure out. Is he say, it sounds actually the way he's saying it, and I guess we should be more clear about this. It sounds like what he's saying is that it's only the national tragedy of right. Tisha B'Av. It's not that the day then lets you complain about the fact that you got fired from your job. I don't know. We can try to get that inside. It sounds like it's a national tragedy that you're allowed to complain. If that's the case, then the application to our Mishnah is a little bit stretched. It doesn't actually fit. But the reason I wanted to bring it was to show that I think it's dealing with the same struggle and the same tension, that we don't really know, we don't really get it. The way our Mishnah dealt with it, at least according to Tosfos Yom Tov, again, remember, according to some, this isn't a question. The Rambam had absolutely no problem with this. Right? The Rambam says, this is the way the world works, you don't like it, and your reality is messed up. Your own vision of the world is messed up. The later commentators say, even though they bring proof from Chazal, so it's actually, you know, they bring Midrashim that say this, but it doesn't fit with reality. Right, so then we have to answer that question. What does it mean it doesn't fit with reality? And our way out of it is either to say, so we don't understand the full reality, we have to enter Gilgulim, we have to enter Olam Haba, we have to enter Tshuva, we have to answer all these things that sort of throw away the equation to make us not get it. But we also have to come into the fact that it's still God. It's still just in some way, even if we don't understand it. And that seems to be the operating principle as to how we deal with personal tragedy, as well as communal tragedy. Maybe on one day we're allowed to kvetch and complain about communal tragedy, but that's not how we deal with it in general. Not that this is easy. Nobody should get away with this and say, oh, okay, this is so simple. The fact that that the commentators and Chazal, everybody's struggling with this, means that this is a struggle. This is something that we have to grapple with, because it's, if you're setting up the system that it doesn't fit with my reality, then what do you expect for me to do? Right, so I can say I accept it, but I'm supposed to. I think there's supposed to be a struggle here. It's not supposed to be so simple. Okay, so that's it for today. We're going to move on to the next Mishnah. Again, I apologize. I keep doing this to you. I still don't know. It's not fully my fault, but I still don't know when I'm not going to be here. There's going to be at least 1 or 2 weeks I'm not going to be here. I don't know if that's next week or not. So please stay tuned. Look out in the bulletin to see if there's going to be a shiur next week. I'm going to take a few questions, but we're also going to bench. Question, yeah.
The question is that what we just discussed now, we just explained, it's not apparent from the Mishnah. So we have to go delve into the Mishnah to figure out what Hillel was trying to say.
Right, so if you take the Mishnah at face value, it is just a simplified statement. And our problem is that the world isn't so simple, and then we get to a whole... If you want to just say Hillel on face value, you know, this guy deserved it, okay.
You got it.
Well, Hillel's saying that. Hillel seems to be saying that. But what Sarit's saying is that if you just look at Hillel's statement, it sort of is in your control. You do bad, bad will happen to you. You do good, good will happen to you. Our problem is that it doesn't seem that way. So that's where the commentators come in. But if you want to just take Hillel, if you go through commentators on this, you'll notice that there's a very little commentary on it. The people don't pick on this one. Tosfos Yom Tov is big. The Maharal talks about it a little bit, but in general, there's not a lot of material on this subject. Okay, so we're gonna bench. I don't think we have a Kohen.
We have 10.
We have 10.
No, we have 9. No, we don't have 10. We don't have.
Jake had to run out. Rabbi Shiloni, please lead us.
No. Amen.